Now seeing stars, I fought to twirl my hips and release his latched ankles with Michelle's leg still locked around my waist. I managed to climb to my feet, his arms bracing him from the ground. I twisted and turned until I felt one of his sweaty legs lose its grip and begin to slide around my stomach. This was my chance. His death clenched, now weak, and I pushed his legs downward. Slipped out of his squeeze and dove on top of him, where I got my left arm around his neck and fought to set a headlock. Unable to establish it, but still maintaining leverage. I remained coiled up with him on the dirt until we were both absolutely exhausted. A stalemate. That's when the chief stepped in and called it. We slowly got to our feet, and the chief escorted us to the middle of the big dirt pit. Where he raised both our hands to the sky in victory, the crowd wailed. Both of us sweaty and spent, but only me a bloody mess. Michelle and I were peering at each other in post-fight regard when he lowered his eyes and suddenly bolted out of the ring and sprinted away from the village. The crowd, which now included everyone in the village, enveloped me. The chants of Dauda 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 Dauda. Note to self. All prodigals once Pharisee. All Pharisees once prodigal. That night alone, on a straw mattress, I lay on the roof of a mud hut in the Dogon village of Benjam Otto in the middle of Mali, Africa, staring into the heavens where I counted 29 shooting stars cascade across the sky. Dreaming with my eyes open, I watched as the constellation of the Southern Cross revealed itself to me for the first time. Like the radiance of the luminescent cluster of butterflies, I'd come upon the Peruvian trail to the Amazon. I was now in the cradle of another truth. It was divine intervention and extraterrestrial transmission of Cosmo. Logical facts. Indeed, a celestial suggestion. More like a direct ordinance from God, and I was the chosen one in his church. Remember this, I vowed. All because I chased down a wet dream. Literally. Green light. As I began serenely dozing off into my dreams of superior sanctity, my peaceful breathing was casually interrupted by blocked nasal passage. My own. I sat up and snorted a healthy amount of mucus into my mouth, then ready to hurl the sizable mass of coagulated phlegm off the rooftop. The launch luge made it no more than 5 inches from my curled tongue before it boomeranged back and straddled its oyster-sized snot ball across my face. I'd forgotten about the mosquito net I had put on my head earlier. Unbelievable. Nothing will bring you back down to earth like spitting a loogie into your own face. Believe it. Prescription time. Unbelievable. It's an adjective, meaning not able to be believed. Unlikely to be true, so great or extreme as to be difficult to believe. Extraordinary, not able to be believed. What a foolish word. A rude and disrespectful word. We think we use it to flatter and give credit to, wow, what an unbelievable play. What an unbelievable film. What an unbelievable act of courage. What an unbelievable sunset. What an unbelievable break. Why would we define things that are incredible and awesome, things that actually make us believe in them, more with this pillar of antinomy? Something spectacular, phenomenal, outstanding, and most excellent is most definitely not unbelievable, awe-inspiring. Magnificent, prodigious, and extraordinary. Sure, it just happened. You just witnessed it. You didn't believe it unbelievable. Quite the opposite. Give incredible more credit, will ya? A man flies a suicide jet into the World Trade Center. The coronavirus comes, hurricanes, ravaged, fires burn in Rand's scam. The government lies to us. Our best friend lies to us. We lie to ourselves. Our fiancé says I do. Our child says his first words. We find a cure for cancer. One day we die in peace. Unbelievable, no, it just happened. You just witnessed it. You did it. Believe it. Acknowledge the existence of greatness and phenom's excellence and extraordinary's pleasures and pains, recognize them as true entities, both beautiful and horrible, tragic and heaven-sent. Be not naive to all inspiring feats of good or good fortune, nor gullible to mankind's capacity for evil. Be not blind to the credence of natural beauties and disasters. Nothing God or Mother Nature does is unbelievable. And if there's one thing you could depend on people being, it's people. Don't act so surprised. Unbelievable happens all the time. Sometimes it's divine and sometimes it's a loogie in our face. Don't deny it, depend on it, expect it, believe it. The next morning I packed my rucksack and said goodbyes to my new friends before heading out on the 15-mile hike to the next village. At the perimeter of Benjamin, a man stood waiting for me. It was Michelle. Without a spoken word, he gently put his palm in mine. As I approached and proceeded to walk me the full 15 miles to the next village, holding my hand the entire way. When we arrived, he released me silently, turned around and walked the 15 miles back to Benjamin to alone. Later that night I said to ISA. Look, I gotta talk to you about yesterday's wrestling match. I mean, how did I do? I think I held my own, he said, chuckled to himself, and then said no doubt or you did very well. Everybody think Michelle going to have strong white men named out on his back and no more than 10 seconds. Really asked, yes, really Michelle. Not only champion of this village. Michelle, champion of this village and tree village back, so I won. That's why the village I'll channel my name afterwards. It is not about win or lose out there. It is about do you accept the challenge? He said as he looked at me and smiled. When you did that. You already won. You come back down to we make money. I did go back 5 years later. Michelle had 4 kids and a busted hip by then, so we didn't have another wrestling match, but he still held my hand and walked me to 15 miles to the village the next day. Wet. I had left my scent. Green light note to self, the justice it deserves. To appreciate a place fully, a man must know that he can live there. When all his discomforts disappear and he lets himself be owned by the place, he needs to customize and localize himself to the place he visits to the degree that he knows he could dwell there forever. Then and only then is it truly acceptable for him to leave. Wherever you are, give the place the justice it deserves. I came back to Los Angeles that changed man again, feeling more clear and practical than I ever had. I gave my wet dream and the people that took me to the justice they deserved, and my justifications were more than returned. Another period of 22 days with very limited spoken English and mostly pantomimed conversations gave me a solitaire yet communal experience that made me feel more at home than I ever had before. And I got my wink back with my tolerance for verbose vanities not far above zero. I knew the re-entry into my fast-paced and privileged life back in Hollywood was going to be a challenge, no longer interested in transient whimsy and city life. I was ready to move on from the chateau. Before I found new residence, I got a phone call. It was Pat as usual with another splendid offer that would surely provide some old-fashioned hijinks. Hilarity. Hey little brother, let's go play this golf course in Palm Springs at the La Quinta Resort. I got us a room for 2 nights. I'll drive out and pick you up. Thursday afternoon we'll play Friday and Saturday, then I'll drop you off back in LA on Sunday on me. Pat had been paying it out service to pick winners for him in college football games the last few months, and his money was well spent. His town had recently been on a 27-2 run against the spread, and Pat had been hammering his hot streak. It always made me happy when Pat hit a hot streak of any kind, because in the grand scheme of things he had terrible luck compared to me and our brother Rooster. See, in 1988, at last, his first and only wife, Lori, and a freak car accident, number 27 years after he never allowed himself to love or be loved by another female except his dogs. Neiman and Molly. Until September 27, 2015, when Emery James McConaughey was born. Now Pat has a daughter and someone to love as much as Lori. Like Rooster says, if it weren't for Pat, we wouldn't understand struggle. We have a whole lot less compassion for people having a hard time. Pat taught us forgiveness. That's why he's my lucky charm. With the windows down in Boston's more than a feeling blaring through the speakers, we pulled Pat's dusty and did Ram Charger, dually pickup truck into the La Quinta Resort at 8 o'clock that Thursday evening, just after sundown. There to greet us in suits and ties were the bellman and manager. Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to the La Quinta Hotel and Resort. How was your journey? In a headband, sleeveless t-shirt, and a pair of flip-flops, I stepped out of the passenger's door and said, great trip. How y'all doing? The sound of a large barking dog. Now echoing through the concourse, the manager's eyes went to the source of the sound in the truck bed of Pat's. Dooley was his dog, a very excitable 140-pound black Labrador named Neiman, who's aggressively pacing back and forth impatient to go potty. I'm very well served, very, very well indeed, they said. As I casually crossed to the back of the truck to fetch our luggage and clubs, the manager and the bellman kept their distance. And may I ask, were you planning on the dog staying with you? The manager asked. Yeah, I said, well sir, we don't allow dogs at the resort. Unloading our golf clubs without a stutter in my step, I said, oh well, this is my brother's seeing a dog. I made sure to say it loud enough so that Pat, who is now just getting out of the driver's seat, could hear me as if he'd rehearsed it. Pat raised his arm up in front of him and appeared to search for the side of the truck, found it, then secured himself to stand up firmly. "Hang on, Pat, you got it," I asked. Pat, eyes half closed in a squint, brought his other hand to the truck side for assurance.
Yeah, buddy, I'm good. We're here."
The manager's chin slightly dropped in embarrassment. Then he looked to me with a face that gave me assurance he hadn't put together the implausibility of my blind brother driving. My no-flinch Jedi mind trick. Now successful, I put Neiman on her leash, unloaded her from the truck and walked her over to pat Neiman on Pat. I said to which, Pat perfectly enacted a blind man, now relaxing because he had his trusty seeing eye dog to guide him.
"You good?" I asked.
Pat then did his best Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man imitation and said, "Pat, good." Neiman unleash, which didn't really make sense to me because he was pretending to be blind, not autistic, but I rolled with it. The manager and bellhop grabbed and carted our luggage right this way, Mr. McConaughey, they said, and began leading us to our suite. Neiman didn't play her part near as well as my brother and I. Instead of leading Pat, she pulled him left and right, on every shrub and Mercedes tyrant. Sight. 40 paces ahead straight. I said to Patton, who replied to no one in particular. 40 paces, yes, 40 paces. The manager and bellman, now very considerate, and a bit ashamed at their earlier questioning of the service dog, escorted us to our room where they opened the door, walked the luggage in and with an excess of civility, made sure that Neiman Impact got into the room safely. Neiman immediately began knocking over furniture, jumping atop the bed and slobbering on the windows. "We're here, Pat. This is where we will stay for the next 2 days," I said, voice raised for some reason, as if Pat were hard of hearing as well.
Good.
This is where we stay," Pat replied in equal decimal. Still squinting and weaving. His head left and right, like Stevie Wonder, the manager, and the bellman now started backing out of the suite door. I hope this room is to your liking.
We thank you for staying with us," he said.
Now he was raising his voice. "We hope you have a pleasant stay, and if you need anything, please let us know."
"Okay, thank you, Pat.
Tell the nice man thank you."
Pat nodded, "Thank you, nice man, thank you."
Doubling down on his best. Raymond Babbitt. When they shut the door behind them, Pat and I fell over laughing. "Thanks a lot, Neiman. You almost blew it for us." The next morning, Pat and I were on the tee box for our 8:09 a.m. tee. Time it off first, then my blind brother Pat cranked a 300-yard drive down the middle of the fairway. Pat driving. We hopped into the cart and started to head off for a day on the links when suddenly the hotel manager and his security guard hustled up to our side. Confident he had busted us, but doing his best to remain professional. The manager said, "Hum, good morning, men. About the dog." He looked at me and then at Pat. We stared at him as if he had asked rhetorical question.
"Yeah," I said, "I thought you said he was your seeing my dog."
"Oh, I thought we're busted." That's when Pat Coolers can be without missing a beat said to the manager, almost apologetically.
"Oh yeah.
Only got night blindness, dude." The manager's jaw dropped. The security guard leaned back on his heels. We hit the gas and pulled away to play the first of our 2 rounds of golf that weekend. After a great weekend of golf, his eyesight now restored. Pat dropped me back at the chateau. My trip to Mali had me keen to keep in tune with Mother Nature's rhythm, so I retired my leather pants, boots and Thunderbird for a pair of board shorts, flip-flops and a surfboard. It was time to chase the summer at a new address where the Pacific Ocean was my backyard instead of Sunset Boulevard. I lived on the beach literally. I jogged on the beach. I threw frisbees with Miss Hutt on the beach. I swam in the Pacific. I learned to surf. I rarely wore a shirt. I made more films, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Tiptoe Sahara 2 for the Money, Failure to Launch, and We Are Marshall. The romantic comedies remained my only consistent box office hits, which made them my only consistent incoming offers with their mid-range budgets and the right chemistry between the leads. They were thoroughly successful at the box office. For me personally, I enjoyed being able to give people a 90-minute breezy romantic getaway from the stress of their lives where they didn't have to think about anything. Just watch the boy chase the girl, fall down, then get up and finally get her. I had taken the baton from Hugh Grant and I ran with it. In the tabloids, the industry and the public opinion, I became the shirtless on the beach rom. Calm guy. It became a thing and I was also in great shape. Prescribe the workout scale from waking up to a triathlete. Waking up for some of us, this is enough. Drink a glass of water. Hydration for health. That'll do it. Taking a deuce, the morning bowel movement makes your back feel better and your eyes bluer. What else you need? Wash the dishes. It's manual labor. Hey, that counts. Just schedule it. You don't have to actually work out, just plan on it. That's enough. It's manual labor as well, and it cleans the pipes and clears your perspective. Get a haircut, more like retail therapy. It makes us feel like we look better and hence are in better shape. Purchase a skinny mirror. Get one like the ones in all the high-end fashion brand stores. It's an illusion, but hey, when we look thinner in the mirror, we act thinner in life. Get a tan. Like a haircut and a skinny mirror, but it really does cut 6 pounds, no mayo. Please cut the mayo, please. I'm on a diet. No fries with that, like the above, this can be tough duty. I have the Big Mac and a large Coke, but cut the fries. Will you want a diet? One less beer. I only had 18 beers today. Honey, I usually drink a case. I'm watching my weight. Steam. The non-active way to generate a sweat from without. Substitute the fork with chopsticks. You eat smaller bites of food. Which is better for your digestion and makes you feel full sooner. Sex, the original exercise, it generates a sweat from within and improves relationships, making our companions see us in a more flattering light, which psychologically makes us feel like we look better. But darts MPOs? I mean, why go to the gym when you can just take some steroids and do plyometrics on your steering wheel while you drive to and from work? Babysit the kids. You never sit down. You're always corralling, especially if you have more than two. Take the stairs. No more elevators for you. Dance. Probably my favorite one on the list. Cardio, flexibility, and fun. I honestly wish more people were doing more of it. Walk, don't ride. Pilates, low intensity, excellent flexibility and core strength. Yoga, intense and relaxing. A mental meditation as well. Jog, low heart rate, but a good fat burner with some distance. Run, high intensity, high heart rate. The gym are one-stop shop for our entire body. Plus it's usually got those skinny mirrors. A trainer, now you're getting serious. Got someone cracking the whip so you can't procrastinate. Marathon, high intensity, long distance. A serious amount of your day spent doing it. Triathlon, run, bike, swim for strength, speed and agility. This is the all-around workout. May I was a daily wake up, take a deuce, get a 10, doing yoga on the beach, runner who drank a lot of water and danced all night. How about you? I was never too bothered by the consistent critical write-offs of me in my work. I enjoyed making romantic comedies and their paychecks rented. The houses on the beach is Iran, shirtless on getting relative with this inevitability. No way was this working-class country boy going to be condescending about the opportunities they gave me, no matter how categorized they were. That said, as much as I was enjoying the self-engineered ease of my life, I was becoming uneasy with a couple of things. One, the romantic comedy stopped presenting a challenge for me. I felt like I could read the script today and play the part tomorrow too. I was beginning to feel like an entertainer, not an actor. And what was wrong with that? I asked myself. I had good comedic timing. I had branded affirmative humor and delusional optimism. I had kept as much masculinity in the neutered realm. Calm male as you could, and I had succeeded in giving the audience what they wanted. Still, I felt like I was posturing instead of behaving, playing a part instead of being more of myself. What started off 15 summers before as a highly personal creative expression was nourishing my spirit less and less. Acting was feeling like a means to an end that I had no address for. And if this was all acting was for me, then I wasn't sure I wanted to act. Bumper sticker, I am good at what I love. I don't love all that I'm good at. I was getting much more inner growth from my travels than from my career. I love sales, education, music, and sports. I consider changing professions, maybe start writing short stories and travelogues, going into advertising or becoming a teacher, a musician, or a football coach. I didn't know. Prescribed poem. The grifter. Called yourself an artist. I call you a grifter. If you were Picasso, you could have stole from me. But you showed your hand and you didn't know it. I would have got away with it, but a liar like you can't. My dog could have sniffed your oil scam, your sleight of hand ain't too slight. Boy, you thought you'd meditate me to sleep when you pull the trigger, you wit yourself cause you never even cocked your gun.
Restless again, I needed some evolution. I needed to head upriver, change lanes, feel some ascension in my grade, but how? Once more I changed addresses. I bought a house in the Hollywood Hills with the yard big enough to get my hands back in the soil and enough bedrooms for a family of five. Prescription turned the page. The late and great University of Texas football coach Daryl Royal was a friend of mine and a good friend to many. A lot of people looked up to him. One was a musician whom I'll call Larry. Larry was in the prime of his country. Music career had number one hits and his life was rolling. He had picked up a habit of snorting the white stuff somewhere along the line, and at one particular party after a bathroom break, Larry strode up to his mentor Daryl and started telling Coach's story. Coach listened as always. And when Larry finished his story and was about to walk away, Coach Royal put a gentle hand on his shoulder. And discreetly said, "Hey Larry, you got something on your nose there, bud." Larry immediately hurried to the bathroom mirror, where he saw some white powder he hadn't cleaned off. He was ashamed, embarrassed, partly because he felt so disrespectful to Coach Royal, but mainly because he'd obviously gotten too comfortable with the drug to even hide it as well as he should. Well, the next day Larry went to Coach's house and rang the doorbell. Coach answered and Larry said, "Coach, I need to talk to you, Daryl. Welcome to men." Larry confessed he purged his sins to Coach. He told him how embarrassed he was and how he'd lost his way in the midst of all the fame and fortune toward the end of an hour. Larry, now in tears, asked Coach, "What do you think I should do?" Now Coach, being a man of few words, said simply, "Larry, I have never had any trouble turning the page in the book of my life." Larry got sober that day and he has been for the last 46 years. Great leaders are not always in front. They also know who to follow. You ever get in a rut stuck on the merry-go-round of a bad habit I have? We are going to make mistakes, own them, make amends and move on. Guilt and regret kill many a man before their time. Get off the ride. You are the author of the book of your life. Turn the page. Part 6: The arrow doesn't seek the target. The target draws the arrow. March 2005. I had met, spent time with, and seriously dated some wonderful women in my life, many of whom I am still friends with today, but ultimately they were all stops, no stays. In my mid-30s I was looking for a lifetime lover, a best friend, and a mother-to-be. I was looking for more. I was looking forward to one. I was looking for her. Then I had another wet dream. Yes, a wet one. No, not that wet one. A new one. Again, I was at peace, this time sitting on the front porch of my one-story wood-paneled country home and a rocking chair. There was a curbless horseshoe-shaped dirt driveway that rounded at the three front steps to the elevated Ramada that I was swaying on. The two-acre green St. Augustine lawn was healthy and uncut. Through the trees in the distance near the driveway's entrance, Suburbans, Range Rovers, Navigators and station wagons began to approach the house in a ceremonial procession. Behind the wheel of each automobile was a woman, in the back of each were four young children, all excitedly waving to me as they parked two tires in the St. Augustine, two on the dirt. Each woman was serene and satisfied. Every child was smiling, laughing and healthy. We all knew one another very well. 22 vehicles, 22 women. 88 children. The women were not there to see a man they had ever married. They were there to see a man they loved and the father of their children. The children were there to see their dad. Me. All there to celebrate my 88th birthday. One child for each year of my life. Everyone was filled with joy, eager to commemorate my birth, and to see one another. Each mother and I shared an idyllic memory. The children roosted up on my lap. We hugged, we kissed. We laughed, we joked, we cried tears of happiness. They all gathered around me on the porch for family photograph, and we looked toward a large format box camera on a tripod at the top of the driveway. 321. Then I came. In that dream, I had never married. I was an 88-year-old bachelor, and that notion for all of my life at that point would have been a nightmare, but not in this dream. No, this was a beautiful dream. This dream told me it was okay. It told me I was okay. This dream reminded me that all I ever knew I wanted to be in life as a father. The dream also let me know that if I never met the one for me and got married, that was okay too. I could have children. I could become a father, I could become an 88-year-old bachelor surrounded by 22 smiling mothers and 88 happy, waving, healthy and excited children, all of whom I loved, all of whom loved me. The red light vision of being a lifelong bachelor had come to me in a green light wet dream. It was a spiritual sign.
A message to surrender, to quit trying so intentionally to find the perfect woman for me and rather concede to the natural selection process of finding her finding me or not. So I quit looking for her.
Then she came.
Note to self. The arrow doesn't seek the target. The target draws the arrow. We must be aware of what we attract in life, because it is no accident or coincidence. The spider waits in his web for dinner to come. Yes, we must chase what we want, seek it out, cast our lines in the water, but sometimes we don't need to make things happen. Our souls are infinitely magnetic. It was July 2005, and I was holding court at the head of the table at the Hyde Club on Sunset Boulevard and making the best margaritas on the planet. When I saw her, a thin, soft turquoise dress draped over caramel-colored shoulders, floating right to left over the hazy, low-lit neon room. She wasn't delivering anything. She wasn't leading anywhere. She was defying gravity in the direction she wanted to go, and I wanted to be where she was headed. Her head had no bob or her feet even touching the ground. I couldn't be sure. Like I said, the room was low-lit and hazy. She made an impression and a definition, naughty and fundamental, young with the past, homegrown and worldly, innocent and cunning, springtime and salty, and a queen. She was no virgin, but she was not for rent a mother-to-be. She wasn't selling nothing, didn't need to. She knew what she was, who she was, and she owned it. Her own element, a natural law. Proper noun, inevitable.
What?
Is that? I said to myself as I rose from my seat, her gravity pulling me. I locked in as she settled on a red velvet chaise lounge next to two other women. Unable to catch your eye. I raised my right arm and began to wave, trying to get our attention, when I heard a voice in my left ear like, this is not the type of woman you wave over from across the bar. Son, get your up, young man, and go introduce yourself. It was my mom's voice. Time to get relative. I walked over to the long chair where this woman was mid-conversation. She looked up.
Hi, I'm Matthew.
I said as I extended my hand for an honorable shake. I could tell she recognized me, but she remained seated again, not for sale or easily impressed. Camilla, she replied as she extended her right arm up and gave an assured yet casual handshake. I caught my breath. Would you and your two friends like to come over to our table? I'll make you a great margarita. She glanced at her friend, excuse me, she said. Then stood up alone and let me escort her over. Even though she left her friends, I could immediately tell that there was no chance she would have come to the table unless I had done the gentlemanly thing and invited them over as well. I mixed the best margarita I ever made. I spoke Spanish better than I had ever spoken before. She spoke Portuguese. I've never understood Portuguese as well as I did that night, and haven't since. The rhythms of the Latin languages seemed to fit the meter. 20 minutes had passed as we huddled mouth to ear at the end of the table, having our first conversation, when McConaughey cars out front, "Let's roll." My buddy screamed over the music. It was closing time, 2 a.m. "Give me 5 minutes," I said, holding an open palm in front of his face without averting my gaze from hers. "You want to come back to my house for a drink?" I asked her, mean the boys are going there for a nightcap. "No, no, no thanks, not tonight." Thanks though, she kindly said. I walked her to her car, which to her surprise was not where she had parked it. It was right here, she said, standing in the vacant parking lot at the gas station next to the club. "Ma'am, you looking for a white aviator?" The gas station attendant who overheard his? "Yes, I am that got towed. This spot is for the gas station only," he said. "Come on, one drink at my house," I said. "Then I'll have the chauffeur take you home." "Okay, sure," she said at last. We loaded the waiting SUV. My two buddies moved to the third.